Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
What's up, everybody? It's the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. I'm Anthony Cazenza, and kind of a special episode. We've got some announcements later, and I am, I don't know if jet lagged is the right term, but I am, I've been in multiple time zones today, John Sheeran, and I'm trying to play catch up. I can't promise how great my internet service is going to be here and or the sound quality, because I'm streaming from a hotel room in middle America, in Chicago. I'm in downtown Chicago, but I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be talking Cincinnati Bengals. And John, we're talking about Bengals' first preseason game of 2022, the first game played since the Super Bowl.
It's kind of crazy, man. It's been not a long offseason, I guess shorter compared to everyone since 1989 or something like that. But yeah, a lot has happened. A lot has happened just in the last 2 weeks. And had I known you'd be in Chicago, I probably would have met you halfway, man. We could have done this like a live show.
Damn, Oh, man.
It's not too often you're in the Midwest.
I know. I've got, unfortunately, I'm only here for a little bit, but I've got Michael Jordan's Steakhouse down in the lobby of my hotel below. I'm thinking about hitting that up. There's some other places I'm thinking about hitting, but I did hit the second half of a Cubs game. I know Cubs aren't necessarily the most favorite team of a lot of folks in Cincinnati, but that's okay. Still got to see the classic Wrigley Field. I'd never been there, and that was kind of cool. So doing my thing, and then, of course, doing the podcast thing and bringing you all some coverage with myself and John, and, of course, via Cincy Jungle. You got to keep it to cincyjungle.com for all your news, opinions, analysis, podcasts, etc. We've got some great announcements that we're going to be dropping towards the end of the show there. So you're going to want to stick with that. And before we get to kind of news notes, and then of course, previewing the first game with the Cincinnati Bengals, John, I want to kind of remind folks, because in case you didn't know, we have a fundraiser that we have kicked off with the Pollock Family Foundation, of course, named after the Bengals outside linebacker and College Football Hall of Fame player, David Pollock, former Georgia Bulldog and current ESPN college football analyst, the Pollock Family Foundation. You can go to givesendgo.com/Pollock Family Foundation. You can see here, we've got a lofty goal here, and it's because they're trying to do a number of different things. They have begun to kind of rebrand the Pollock Family Foundation, where it was kind of about, family wellness and how to avoid, potential childhood obesity, diabetes, all that kind of stuff. And now they've done other things because the foundation has been involved with the Children's Hospital of Atlanta, been involved with at-risk mothers, been involved with at-risk children. And so we are teaming up with them, and they're trying to put on a big Christmas concert, as well as continuing to do all this kind of stuff in their region there. And of course, across the U.S. So please, 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 if you have not already, please give to the Pollock Family Foundation. Recently, John, the stories that we wrote up on David Pollock were profiled on SB Nation's home site, the SB Nation NFL home site, as well as the Falcoholic, which, by the way, I love the Cincy Jungle name, but the Falcoholic is just, that is a
phenomenal.
Oh my gosh, it is just a fantastic name. Profiled there, and then of course on Cincy Jungle, we have prizes and everything. But if you listen to the interview, if you listen to our show in general, this is not money that's going to go to John and I. Everything's going here to the Pollock Family Foundation. If you leave a YouTube super chat, anything like that, It all helps. We're going to play this out for a little while here. We do have prizes, and we're going to unveil some of those in the very near future here. But we just want to continue to promote what we're doing here, this fundraiser that we're doing on behalf of the Pollock Family Foundation.
Yeah, lofty goals, but for very worthy causes. And even if we don't hit our goal, every single one of those dollars count, because they're going to great causes and just great things that they are doing. So if you haven't already, like Anthony said, please consider donating if you can.
Please do. And, you know, we've got a lot of opportunities for you to be involved with that. But, man, it's just they do a lot of great work, and we just want to support them. And they're in the midst of growing that foundation, and we want to try and support them in that. So if you can, givesendgo.com/Pollock Family Foundation. And of course, in general, if you want to listen to our podcast, if you want to listen to the other great shows on the Cincy Jungle Podcast Network, which include Matt Minnick's Chalk Talk and Coach Speak episodes, a little bit of an announcement later on that, as well as Bengal Jim and Friends and our show, The Orange and Black Insider, all of which are on the Cincy Jungle Podcast channel through your favorite audio streamer. And that's iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of those. We are there. And then, of course, you know, if you like the video stuff, you got to like the Cincy Jungle Facebook page. You got to give a follow to the Cincy Jungle Twitter account, as well as give us a subscribe and a bell notification on the YouTube channel. You can click that beneath John there on the SB Nation logo, the Cincy Jungle logo there. If you click that, there is a an OBI logo there. You can click that and get going there. So we appreciate all of the support. John, let's kick it off. Before we get to preseason game number one, a little bit of news and notes. We'll talk about the stadium in just a second, but just some happenings around camp. Lael Collins is back. Zach Taylor has a game plan, so to speak, for preseason game number one. I guess that'll be the segue into the preview of the game, but just some news and notes going into camp here. Lael Collins and more.
Yeah, so Lael Collins today was cleared to practice. He had passed his physical. He was placed on the active non-football injury list on July 23rd, right before training camp began, because, as we all know, his back flared up sometime in the offseason. I think it was actually in July when he first noticed something, because he was practicing OTAs. So he missed about 2 weeks worth of camp, but now he's back. And much like Alex Kappa when he returned off the PUP list, he's not going to be back right away, just like T. Higgins is. Like, they're working on the rehab field, or they're just being integrated through walkthroughs and the individual drills. So that's the case for Collins right now. It was his first day in pads today, but he wasn't working with the rest of the offensive line when they went into 11-on-11. So he's not ready for contact yet, or they're just not going to put him in those situations just yet. So obviously he will not be playing. And I believe, Anthony, that leaves just maybe, I think, Brandon Wilson and Joe Bocci left on the PUP list, unless I'm forgetting one more person, because I believe Khalid Kareem was also cleared from the PUP list earlier this week. Samaje Perine and, like I said, Alex Kappa were also cleared about a couple weeks ago. So Bengals are getting healthier rather than more injured as the preseason approaches. But yeah, very interesting comments made from Zach Taylor today regarding Friday's preseason game, where basically no starter who is like a clear favored starter on the depth chart is going to play Friday. And I'm a little interested by this, because like Brandon Allen has been practicing with the ones, like with every other starter. So it's not too common that no starter gets to play in the first preseason game. It's usually like a drive or two at least for at least that first game, just to get them some action. But I do wonder if, because it's Brandon Allen, a quarterback, and he's usually with the twos, and if Joe Burrow was healthy, you know, Brandon Allen would just be playing with the second string in practice. I do wonder, honestly, if this means that Joe Burrow is probably returning to practice sometime next week, and this is an opportunity just for Brandon Allen to practice with the guys that he's going to practice with going forward. Maybe I'm reading a little bit too into that, but I do think it's interesting that basically none of like the clear cut favorite starters are going to be playing Friday.
It that's what it seems. And again, this is the entire form. I mean, there was a lot of elements to the formula of success last year when the Bengals made the Super Bowl. I mean, there's obviously the young players maturing quicker than than expected. Joe Burrow coming back from that knee injury more efficient and quickly than a lot of people anticipated. And then, of course, there was just the overall health of the roster, right? I mean, it's just that was kind of the big deal. And then I think it was Paul Daner Jr. of The Athletic who had profiled a story a few months back, and we've talked about it a couple times on this show, where, you know, there was a method to that madness in terms of the team staying healthier, where it was summer, it was into the fall and into the winter, where they were just easing back on practices for their starters and certain players and guys that had nicks and whatnot that were going on. And they just said, hey, we're not going to push it. We're going to rest you. We're going to make sure that everything's taken care of. They revamped the athletic. It was the athletic training and the recovery staff and whatnot. So all of that is kind of playing into this. But of course, too, John, I know a lot of people where they you kind of roll your eyes where you go, okay, preseason, who are you going to see play? Part of this process, though, this roster is very settled in a lot of areas and settled towards the top of a lot of areas. So if you're irritated or if you're kind of like, oh, I mean, what are we really going to watch in this game? Zach has a method to the madness here where it's like, you know, a lot of this roster is largely settled between free agency over the last couple of years, between our draft classes being settled. We need to figure out wide receiver 4 and beyond. We need to figure out really beyond Hayden Hurst, the tight end position. We need to figure out some of the backup offensive linemen, starting left guard position, who's going to rotate. I mean, so there is a little bit. I know it's not the sexiest approach or headline to preseason, but it's kind of like this is a little bit what preseason's about. Like, you got to fill out your roster. You got to find the depth. You got to find the players that make the most sense as you go into the season.
I think that was very telling when the first unofficial quote-unquote depth chart was released. And we all know that is put together not by any coaches. It's basically put together by someone in like the media department. And it's very cookie cutter, right? Like a fan could put that together just based off of what like the Madden ratings would be for each position. But for this year, it was, I think, more accurate than it's been in recent years, because you're right. It's the roster is pretty much set. Like, there's not a ton of battles going on. And what you see there on the depth chart is basically what you're getting from the roster in general. For so many years, you've specifically had the offensive line rotating in and out, guys competing for starting jobs. And really, it's just one spot right now that's up for grabs. And even so, like, Jackson Carman has not been really giving much ground to Cordell Volson in training camp. We haven't heard a ton from Volson in training camp, but Carman is still technically in the competition. They still want to see more from him, which is why he's going to be one of the few guys that's practicing with the first team right now, playing a significant amount or just playing at all in Friday's game. And the same kind of goes for Dax Hill. I know we had someone in the comments saying, how long can Jesse Bates hold out and remain a day one starter? Well, Jesse Bates, he's going to start whenever he comes back. He's too good. He's too valuable to keep on the bench for a rookie, albeit a first round rookie, but a rookie in general. And Dax Hill needs all the reps that he can get. So just in case, if Jesse Bates' holdout prolongs into the regular season, he'll be ready to go. But then there's like the Joseph Osai aspect to it, right? Osai played a decent amount of the first preseason game last year, and he got hurt. There was a lot of backlash from that, whether or not they should have left him in for that long. And maybe that's a dance that they're going to have to play with Dax Hill here. But, you know, it's really just him and not a whole lot of other guys at the safety spot without Bates. So you're looking at Jackson Carman, Joseph Osai, and Dax Hill as potentially the main contributors with the regular season, with the opening 53-man roster, play a decent amount into this game for just various reasons. Because, again, Carman not guaranteed to start at all. We could see a late development here from Cordell Volson towards the later parts of training camp and the preseason. Dax Hill has been doing a lot of work, not only at free safety, but also at slot cornerback. He's been matched up with Jamar Chase a decent amount and other receivers, well, a little bit on the line of scrimmage. Maybe that's more of what his role is going to be going forward into the regular season. And Joseph Osai, who's going to be that, you know, that first edge rusher off the bench, the guy they sorely missed last year, just getting him reps going forth into the regular season. That's very important. I thought it was really interesting, Anthony, when he was asked about Zach Taylor was asked about Joseph Osai He said, yeah, we're going to, you know, manage his snaps and monitor his overall playing time. We're going to let the younger guys kind of fill in. Joseph Asai is like the third youngest player on the roster, even though he's a second year player on the team. Like there's only
young like Dax. I mean, Hill. It's like, yeah. Hello.
Dax Hill, Delonte Hood, and he might be the third, actually. I'm not 100% sure what Shamari Jones's age is, but he's 22 and Asai is 22. Like he needs like the experience. He needs the reps. Obviously he's coming off of the torn meniscus and they don't want to overplay him like they did last year, but like having him have like actual live reps for the first time in a year, that's important.
That's a, you know, we've talked about the youth of Ja'Marr Chase. We've talked about the youth of Jackson Carman. We haven't really talked about the age of Joseph Osai, and that really, that draft class, the top picks that headline that draft class. I mean, you look at that, and it's youth. And then, of course, Osai was kind of a long-term. Of course, if he paid long immediate dividends, you'd be like, hey, awesome. But that was a long-term project there. They knew that going into it. You know, they figured Chase, even with the year off, was gonna pay immediate dividends. And then, of course, Carman was a little bit of a long play as well. If he starts right away, great. On an offensive line that needed some immediate help. But if not, then he was kind of a long play. But you bring up Osai's age, and that's something we haven't talked about here in terms of that draft class, because now you look at that there and what you got out of Chase, what you're hoping to get out of Carman, and now what you're continuing to hope to get out of Osai based on one game of preseason last year, that youth, I don't know, man. It's just – We're sitting here going, well, I mean, how good can Osai be? Well, he was one of the youngest players on the team last year, and now here we go again, still a young player coming off of an injury, and one that they feel that can contribute, even coming off of this injury and probably early on here, and one that they probably need to contribute at least on a rotational basis going forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good case where you could just list him kind of as a de facto starter, because I think. In an ideal world, he plays 25, 30 snaps, maybe even closer to 40 during the regular season, especially in those games when they're playing the Josh Allens, the Lamar Jacksons, the Patrick Mahomeses of the world, when it could potentially come down to a shootout situation and you need fresh legs at pass rusher. I think with Osai's case, like, yeah, I think his role going forward is pretty set, but there's a reality where a guy like Jeff Gunter kind of digs into some of those snaps and opportunities, because Anthony, for all we've heard in the last like week or so, I feel like it's been specifically in the last week of practice, it's been Jeff Gunter, the seventh round pick from this year's class.
Yeah,
was like the 252nd pick. He's been disruptive with the second team, albeit again against backup tackles, and they've been really thin at tackle overall in training camp without Lael Collins. So he's going up against the likes of Isaiah Prince and Devin Cochran at left and right tackle, but like this is the opportunity, this is the stage for a guy like Gunter to really make his mark. And we've talked about it last week. There's Chris Carter, Chris Sims, Darius Hodge. There's always someone that really pops off for the Bengals at edge rusher. And Gunter seems to be more healthy than a guy like Wyatt Hubert, who I believe missed a couple of practices here and there. So Gunter's going to play a ton on Friday. He's fighting for that roster spot, so he needs all the reps that he can get. Even though he's been impressive in training camp and maybe fans want to not play him as much just to preserve him for the regular season, his spot is not 100% solidified, even though he has been pressing. It really does matter what he does here in the preseason starting Friday. And then on offensive line, unfortunately, Deontay Smith is not going to be playing in this game. He, I believe, suffered a back injury over the weekend. He hasn't been practicing. He's listed as day-to-day, but they're not going to rush it. Regardless, he should still feel pretty safe because they just don't have a ton of true tackles on the roster. I believe only two are going to be playing Friday because Jonah Williams and Lael Collins are not. You got Isaiah Prince probably at right tackle and the college free agent and Devin Cochran at left tackle. And maybe you have a guy like Hakeem Adeniji kind of kick out the tackle towards the later parts of the game. But even then, he's going to be filling in a guard for some of the game too. So how they manage those guys at offensive line without any of the starters playing, I'm going to be really interested in that.
I will as well. And again, I know, based on where the off seasons have begun the last handful of years between COVID, Joe Burrow's knee injury, and of course now his appendectomy. You want to see Joe, you want to see the stars, you want to see these players, but you want him healthy. I mean, yeah, you want him ready to go, but you want him healthy. You want him, you want him rested. You want him not nicked up as you enter the regular season. And again, I go back to the idea of you're going to want to find out what you have with players like a Jeffrey Gunter, like a Zachary Carter, right? These are the guys that need to go up against starters or fringe starters or twos or whatever, and not be in the game in the fourth quarter of the first preseason game where you're going up against guys that are not potentially going to make a roster or are grinding for a practice squad spot, what have you. You need to see these guys against starting caliber or potentially starting caliber type of players and really gauge where you're at with things. We talked about this last week, John. You need to find out where the defensive line is, because there are a lot of late picks. There are a lot of undrafted free agents and whatnot, but there are a lot of exciting players in that group aside from Osai, Sam Hubbard, and you know, Hendrickson, et cetera. You've got a group of guys that you've accumulated over the past couple of years that you need to figure out, hey, this group, who has what it takes to make plays on a rotational basis in regular season games, late in the year, bad weather, whatever the case may be. You got to be able to gauge that. And week one, early in week one, and of course week two, week three, but these are the types of situations and scenarios that you want to put these players in that you can hopefully make a gauge on what they're going to do if they're on the active roster.
I'm glad you mentioned Carter. I forgot to bring him up. It seems like he's been mainly at, you know, three technique over the B gap at defensive tackle, but I believe he has been kind of going back and forth between the inside and the outside. But obviously him being third round pick, the only true backup at defensive tackle to BJ Hill, I think, you know, him getting these reps to see what he's made of as a pass rusher, I think that's very important. But of course, we cannot forget the all-important punter battle. So we have both Kevin Huber and Drew Chrisman who are going to be trading blows there when the offense is in, what, like 20 fourth down situations in the first preseason game. That's always a fun time. But you have both Kevin Huber and Chrisman. I don't know who's going to be out there first. Not only punting, receiving long snaps from both Clark Harris and Cal Adamidas, but also as a holder. You know, I would imagine in this situation, they're not going to be going for it a lot on fourth down just to give opportunities for both punters to punt, but also to hold for Evan McPherson. They don't have a backup kicker, so it's going to be McPherson out there, but I'm sure he's going to be rotating between Huber and Chrisman as his holder. And obviously there's chemistry between the battery of Harris and Huber holding for McPherson. I'm interested to see how that gets intermixed, because I know that they've been switching on and off, like who's the holder and who's the long snapper, and not really keeping the same groupings and whatnot. But I would imagine it's still going to be Harris and Huber out there first, just to establish something. But even if it's like fourth and one at like the 10-yard line, I really do think they're just going to kick the field goal just to give those guys as many opportunities to hold and look good doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's one of those things too where situational football in the preseason kind of sort of goes out the window. I mean, like, yeah, you see a lot more like aggressive go for it on fourth down, and you know, like you said, going for field goals when you're like, well, you're down. Why, you know? So again, it's all a gauge of the players you're trying to read, giving them time and finding out what they're able to do in real game time situations. Before we get to a little bit more, and we've got some questions in the live chats here about what to look for, players to watch, and everything with the first preseason game here, John, the Cincinnati Bengals made a little bit of an announcement as it goes. They teased it. A little bit of an announcement with their stadium.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, That takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Gone is the moniker, Paul Brown Stadium, and now it is Paycor Field, right?
Paycor Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So Paycor Stadium in Cincinnati, there is no Paycor Stadium at Paul Brown, you know, Paycor Field at Paul Brown Stadium. There's not. Paul Brown's name is not really associated with the stadium anymore. And we talked about this a week or so ago, where we were like, hey, you know, I think maybe Paul Brown is going to be associated somewhere else and everything, given the history there. Not the case, but Paycor Stadium now, the new moniker of the Bengals home field, going with the White Tiger helmets and everything that they've recently unveiled. What do you think, man? I mean, what do you think about all this and what it means for the Bengals going forward?
So let's start with the Paul Brown aspect of this, because me and the puppets, or just one puppet this week, talked to none other than Emily Parker, who is the director of communications for the Bengals. We talked to her yesterday, and I asked her if keeping Paul Brown's name in the name was ever part of the conversation, or if it was something that, you know, Paycor wasn't really down with, and it was just kind of thrown out in the negotiations. But she said it herself, that they wanted a clear identity of the stadium name. So it was never really a thought to put Paul Brown Stadium at Paycor Field or vice versa or whatever.
Right.
So it was always going to be just like whatever company they decided to sell the naming rights to, stadium or whatever. So Paycor is actually located right next to my old apartment in Norwood. They are an HR.
So it's your fault. That's what you're saying.
Basically. Yeah. I passed that building so many times in the last 2 years driving home, but I mean, it's a very nice building. I'll give them that. I knew nothing about the company. I still barely know anything about the company. I know that they manage like payroll and like HR or something like that. What they do doesn't really matter. Yep. They're a Cincinnati based company. They just went public about a year ago. They're valued somewhere in the billions of dollars or something. I think their IPO sold for like $456 million. So They got the dough. They got a little bit more dough than Skyline, which is why Skyline didn't end up making it to the negotiation tables to put their name on the stadium. So Paycor Field or Paycor Stadium, I guess it kind of flows off the tongue a little bit better than some of these other brands and sponsors and whatnot. But Anthony, I feel like there's been a clear consensus type message here from Zach Taylor, from Mike Brown, even from Emily herself, and that how this move will make them more competitive going forward in the NFL. Like, they're not even hiding the fact that this is really just about gaining another revenue stream to get more cash on hand to include guaranteed money in some of these contracts that they're going to have to do. Like, it's not even like, we decided to just partner up with the Cincinnati-based company just because we're trying to get ahead. No, it's like they're doing this for the money, basically. And there's nothing wrong with that. I just find it kind of interesting how they're just basically saying, like, it out loud, like, this is for, you know, paying players modern NFL contracts. Like they can't get away with $10 million signing bonuses and no guaranteed salaries here and there. Like, this is to add more revenue, more cash flow into their revenue stream. And I don't know how much this is going to impact just the first 2 years of this deal when Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase are up for extensions, because we don't know the financial details yet. But if they're getting a ton of money up front, then that would definitely help them in the negotiations for sure.
Yeah, look, I've said this a couple of times. I'm a little bit of a historian slash traditionalist. Like, I like that. But obviously with history and traditions, there are also some things that you either want to erase or not cling to or whatever. You know, Paul Brown and his impact on football, his impact on the Browns, the Bengals, everything. It can't be denied. So obviously you want to cling to the history there, but there is something to be said about going the way of the Buffalo. And I don't mean the Buffalo Bills. I just mean going the way of what you need to do to be a competitive and or contender franchise in the NFL today. And I don't like that Paul Brown's name is out of the stadium name. I always found that kind of cool that all of these commercial, you know, stadium deals that there were all these companies and, you know, the Bengals just kind of held strong to that. But when you talk about what you just talked about and retaining certain players and having an additional revenue stream and everything else that comes with the renaming rights of the stadium, you kind of say, you know, you just got to bite the bullet a little bit. And, you know, if you want to do something, you've already done something with the Ring of Honor with Paul Brown. If you want to do something separate, whether it's with the practice field, I've heard some people talk about, hey, build a statue of Paul Brown. Hey, that's cool. I like that. You know what? If that money goes to Joe Burrow and the Bengals are winning Super Bowls and or going to the playoffs and winning playoff games annually with Joe Burrow, you know, because of the money that comes in part from a deal like this, it's kind of like, well, you know, use that money also for a statue for the current quarterback as well, if that's how things end up going. I mean, I joke a little bit, but I mean, this is kind of one of the things that you need to do. And when you are a kind of smaller, quote unquote, smaller market team, these are the things that you need to kind of cling to in terms of, hey, you know, we've got big contracts coming up. The salary cap is going to balloon over the next couple of years. These are the things we need to look at. So I don't like the old school guy in me doesn't like the Paul Brown name not being associated with the stadium, but I like the forward thinking because this is one of the things that needs to be done for the team and for the betterment of the team and overall the betterment of the fan base, because this is money you would think is going to kind of go to a number of different things, but potentially, you know, players and whatnot.
Yeah. To me, like the most brash way I can look at this is that one of the last longstanding socialists in the NFL just gone to capitalism in Mike Brown. Like, he's just lived off of revenue sharing for the entirety of his ownership. And now he's utilizing an appreciation of the asset that he owns, which is the stadium and the team in general. And he's selling that for money. And if that's the way that they can, you know, finish these deals and actually get players to agree to them, like, I'm sure Jesse Bates is a little upset that the Bengals don't have a little bit more cash that they can put in escrow for his deal, but that waters under that bridge already. As far as the Paul Brown thing goes, yeah, I think a statue could be in the works. I don't know, but his legacy, name, and everything is still very prevalent in the stadium. Like, it's in the Ring of Honor. It's literally seen every time you watch an all 22 clip because it goes to the game clock on the stadium. It's right next to Anthony Munoz and Ken Riley. There's a quote of his in the locker room. Players pass by it every single day that they're there. The conference room where players sign contracts, that's called the Paul Brown conference room. I think Mo Egger made a good point, though, on ESPN 1530. The Bengals have done a great job of honoring and keeping Paul Brown's legacy alive, and the NFL itself has not, because there is no award named after Paul Brown.
That's a great point.
Yeah, like, and I'm totally stealing like Mo's case here, but like the NFL needs to do a better job of keeping Paul Brown's name alive, and it shouldn't just be up to the Bengals, the team that he founded, to do that. Like, whatever you can do to, I guess, offset this taking his name down off the stadium, I think the NFL would be in a great state of mind to actually do something like that. But, you know, the Bengals have done their part by keeping his name on the stadium for 22 years. But, yeah, it was definitely time to make this move.
I mean, there's the Lamar Hunt trophy. I mean, there's all this stuff within, and rightfully so. But you look at what the NFL has and has not done in terms of honoring Paul Brown. And I think it was on my, honestly, my personal Facebook page. Mike Donahue, great follow on Twitter and great Bengals fan. And he's been a long time listener to basically anything that we have done on Cincy Jungle, avid reader and just a great guy. He had kind of tagged me on something on Facebook that I had written in 2015, and that it was a football life documentary that was finally done on Paul Brown. And oddly enough, it's like, oh, let's do it when the Bengals are 8-0 or whatever in 2015. It's like, oh, that was convenient. But it's not about what I wrote. It was about just recapping, because what I did is I just kind of regurgitated a lot of stuff, honestly, that was talked about in this show. And you had Bill Belichick talking. I mean, all these people that are like, this guy is like the one of the architects of past football and modern football, really. And so when you talk about it was Mo Egger you talked about with, you know, the Bengals have done a good job honoring Paul Brown, but the NFL has not. That's where my problem is. And I guess that's where I cling to with the name of the stadium, because it's like, you know, that's a guy that just needs more. You know, there's all the talk about Al Davis. There's all, and rightfully so, all of these figureheads in NFL history, but he is one that, even though he's kind of on that Mount Rushmore, he's still kind of in the silhouette or the shadows of a lot of these other guys. And it's like, you know, this is a person you need to talk about. And so that's kind of why a little bit I cling to the name of the stadium, but I understand it from a business and financial standpoint. So you got to do what you got to do. And I think, like you said, Paul Brown himself and Mike Brown said it. He's like, hey, I think my father would understand what we're trying to do here. So I think he would understand it as well, but I just hope that there is an additional way, again, like with Ken Anderson, Ken Riley, et cetera, that it brings awareness to someone who is so important to the NFL, and somehow he gets additionally honored or just continues to be recognized for everything that he did.
Well, I mean, if there's any consolation, I feel like a good portion of the fan base will continue to call it Paul Brown Stadium. And I feel like a good portion of just general NFL fans, well, yeah, we'll also continue to call it Paul Brown Stadium. And it doesn't really matter what you call it. Like, they're not, like, there's no penalty against calling it Paul Brown Stadium. But yeah, like that, I feel like that name will continue, not Paul Brown's name, but Paul Brown Stadium, that will continue to live on. But now they're just getting some needed cash in their pockets.
For sure. Let's move on before we get to a remember when and some announcements. We're going to talk just a little bit here about the Bengals' first preseason game here. We talked a little bit about game plan and what we expect to see and whatnot. Who are you most excited to watch this weekend, John, given that we know that there's not going to be a lot of starters, if any at all, really, across the board that are going to play? I mean, who are you most excited to watch get some time, get some plays? And I mean, look, let's just preface it. Obviously, the goal of the preseason, of course, it's to gauge and get depth and round out your roster. The gauge of the preseason is stay freaking healthy. We know that, right? So we you know, that's goal one. But some of the players you are most looking at this week as the Bengals take the field for their first preseason game.
I think it's pretty cool that the first and second round pick, Dax Hill and Cam Taylor-Britt, are going to be playing at the same time, kind of in the same unit. Taylor-Britt's going to be the cornerback starting in place of either Eli Apple or Chidobe Awuzie. I'm interested to see who he's paired with on the other side. But, you know, Dax has gotten, obviously, all the reps at safety. And I feel like we should continue to reiterate this. He hasn't been like a natural safety in a minute. He was mainly a nickel slot cornerback at Michigan. He's used to playing close to the line. So he's been, for the last few months, been playing more in space and playing in these deeper zones. And it's not like he's completely foreign to that, but this has still been, I think, somewhat of an adjustment for him coming off those high school days when he was a safety. And then Taylor-Britt, who you know, has had his moments here and there, but there's also been, he's going up against T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, and there's going to be some L's mixed in there too. So this is his, you know, chance to really be a starter for the first time. Just to see both those guys drafted first, you know, being like the future leaders of the secondary. I'm interested to see what they can do against, I have no idea like what the Cardinals are going to do, if they're going to play Kyler Murray. This would be a great time, I should just say it, to just play the Cardinals in the regular season, because they just have a ton of things going on right now. I don't know if AJ Green is going to play either. I don't know if he's healthy or if he's just going to play at all, but I think this is his return to Parbron's, to Paycor Stadium since he left. So yeah, maybe we get some Taylor Britt versus AJ Green, because I don't think DeAndre Hopkins is healthy enough to return, or maybe he's not going to play that much, but I'm excited to see the rookies in the secondary.
Back to back comments here we'll get to in just a second, but yes, Dax Hill. And I think the emphasis on Dax Hill, given the Jesse Bates situation and the role and everything, with how that's going to be designated, that's going to be interesting to watch. Of course, Cam Taylor-Britt, we've got a soft spot for him because he gave us some great time a few weeks ago. But also, just in general, I think a lot of us really like that pick, and the Bengals opened some eyes in moving up in the second round to get a player like that. So, you know, I think there's some high expectations there, but I'm going to go and do a little low-hanging fruit, thanks to a couple of back-to-back Facebook comments from Seabird, Chris Evans, and then, of course, Samaje Perine. What's going on with the backup running back? You know Joe Mixon's going to get a lot of carries. You know he's going to get a lot of snaps. Chris Evans and Samaje Perine, you would almost assume that the roles maybe this year would be flipped. And it's not an indictment on P. Ryan necessarily. I know a lot of people are still sour about a couple of plays he did not make, but you got to look at a few plays he did make. You can go back to the Chiefs game in the AFC Championship. I mean, he's been just a solid player as a backup guy for the most part, but what Chris Evans brings is that Gio Bernard dynamic, maybe can give you some kick return ability, line him up in the slot, line him up in the backfield, do some different things. We talked about who's wide receiver four. Maybe that's Chris Evans, wide receiver four, wide receiver five in some packages, and you have Mixon in the mix also. I don't know. I'm just excited about the running back group. We know, obviously, what Mixon's going to give you. You know what P. Ryan, the backup, is going to give you, but what is Chris Evans with a higher volume of carries potentially going to give you?
Yeah, and I think Evans right now is the favorite to be the starting kick returner for week one, because Brandon Wilson hasn't been healthy. He's still on the PUP list. So he's been getting predominantly the main work at kick returner. And then you have Trent Taylor and Kwame Lassiter handling punt returner duties. Obviously, you know, seeing what Lassiter can do, see if he can have an Alex Erickson type rookie preseason, that obviously Erickson won the job when he was a rookie and he supplanted Brandon Tate. And I feel like that's a similar dynamic right now, because they have trust in Trent Taylor to just, you know, receive the punt, not Darius Phillips it against the 49ers, get the ball back to the offense. And maybe Lassiter is going to be looking for more chances, but also showing that he has that same consistency to his game. Kendrick Pryor has really been making a lot of waves at wide receiver as, you know, the annual receiver to make a lot of splash plays. He hasn't exactly been Damian Willis out there, but I feel like of all the seven or eight undrafted free agent receivers on the roster right now, he's probably been making the most noise as part of the second team. I am interested to see how much Chris Evans is being used there in the backfield and to see if that role kind of evolves. Thank you to we have a comment saying that Kyler Murray did actually contract COVID-19 pretty recently, so he will not play along with Colt McCoy. Anthony, do you know who is starting a quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals? I'll give you a hint. He used to be in the AFC North as a quarterback.
Ooh, let's see. Well, used to be in the AFC North.
It's not a great hint, I'll be honest.
Okay. I don't know.
Big Ten player.
Is it?
A little small.
Not Tyrod.
No.
Okay, I don't know.
Trace McSorley.
Woo! Yeah. That is a name. Woo.
Former backup of Lamar Jackson.
That's Penn State action right there, is it not?
Yep. Yeah.
Trace McSorley. Wow. Okay. Well, there's Michaela giving us the update there that we should have probably brought to the show, but that's okay. That's okay. Thank you, Michaela. We appreciate that. There are a lot of spots to watch. And again, with starters kind of being at a premium or snaps being at a premium for starters, you know, you kind of go, well, okay, who should we watch here? But given, if you were to say, given reports from camp, things you saw at camp, because you went to, you went to camp there, and potential openings or snap availability in these preseason games, who are you seeing? You know, we're talking about the first two draft picks and, you know, all kinds of different positions. I mean, are you seeing or predicting someone like a Kwamity Lassiter or someone on the defensive line in that edge rush group, interior lineman group? I don't know. I mean, who are you expecting to be like, you know, not expecting, but if these back end guys are getting a lot of snaps, who are you looking at saying, you know, that's a guy I kind of feel like is going to make a name for himself?
Yeah, I think Lassiter probably has the best case just because he has the best clear-cut opportunity. Tariquius Tisdale, I believe I'm saying his name right, he's kind of flown under the radar. I believe he was like kind of in the news a little bit during OTAs, but we haven't really heard a ton about him through training camp. But again, the depth of defensive tackle and five technique really is very minimal. Like, they're still kind of easing back Tyler Shelvin from injury. Like, Josh Tupou is still a mainstay. You know, Zach Carter is going to make the team. He's going to get snaps. They brought in a guy named Dominique Davis at three technique as well. So they have seven defensive tackles, but Tisdale probably is the most unique in terms of his physical stature. He's built like one of those traditional 4-3 Marvin Lewis defensive ends at like 6'5", 295, 35-inch arms. And he didn't really play that much at Ole Miss because he was injured a little bit. But I'm interested to see like him along with this defensive line as a whole, because the Cardinals offensive line starting wise is not very good. So I can't imagine their backups are also very good either. So they're going to get chances to eat along with Jeff Gunter, along with Noah Spence, who is still here, along with Khalid Kareem, who may or may not play because he just returned from practice. But I mean, Anthony, like Kareem, because he didn't practice, because guys like Gunter are making names for himself, he might be on the bubble too. And he needs all the reps that he can get.
Yeah, and that's the versatility of Kareem, or the potential versatility of him, which is coming off the edge and maybe rushing inside on some obvious passing downs. I mean, those are some of the things that are going to get him on the roster. Obviously, he had that gigantic play last year against the Denver Broncos that, I don't want to be overdramatic, but I don't want to say changed the trajectory of the season, but really kind of kept things afloat at least. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It really, that play alone was just kind of like, whoa. So you can't discount plays like that. And I remember Khalid Kareem last year in preseason before, I think he suffered an injury. I want to say it was against the Dolphins. There was on one of the opening series, within three plays, he had a quarterback pressure and another that led to an incompletion, a batted ball or something like that. So, I mean, he's flashed when he's had the opportunities. It's him getting on the field. That's always kind of been the thing. And then of course you've got Cam Sample. Where do you play him? You've got Gunter, you've got Hubert, you've got all these guys here. So there is a log jam at that spot there. But, you know, obviously we can talk about, hey, the Bengals won, the Bengals lost, or what. Really, in preseason, especially when you're a team coming off of a Super Bowl appearance, it's kind of like, I don't know if wins or losses really indicate much. But, I mean, what are you looking for them to achieve? What are you looking for them, whether it's early in the game, whether it's late in the game? I mean, what are some of the things where you go, hey, even if they lost, this was a game where you can say mission accomplished?
Well, per usual, the defense always looks good this time of year. And I, against Tampa Bay last year, that was the first preseason game. Defense played really well there. I think they had at least two interceptions. Obviously, Joseph Asai and Darius Hodge, they popped off against the Buccaneers' offensive line. It was a great showing from them. And then you also had Brandon Allen at quarterback. So I think defensively, again, just generating consistent pressure against the backup offensive line, that should be the goal for literally every team in the NFL in the preseason. And in the secondary, like, they've been hyped up a ton, at least with the starters. But I think in general, their defensive backs have been playing well. I think, you know, good communication, guys in the right spots, not necessarily coming out with three interceptions and 10 passes defense, but just showing good communication, showing that, you know, you work well in tandem. Again, this is Dax Hill and Cam Taylor-Britt going to play a ton together. But you also have guys like Tyson Anderson, Michael Thomas. The battle at safety, I think, is interesting, too, because if Wilson comes back, that's five guys that can make the roster. Maybe Mike Thomas gets the boot. Maybe it's Brandon Wilson who gets the boot as well. So Anderson showing out, that will help his case. Then you have backup cornerbacks like Trey Flowers. You know, he's been playing more on the boundary with some injuries, so I'm interested to see if he's there instead of more of his overhang defender over the middle role. Jalen Davis, he's battling with some guys like Delonte Hood. Alan George, who, get this, Anthony, he was the guy who played for Vanderbilt that had to guard Jamar Chase when Jamar Chase had like four touchdowns.
Yeah.
Like, I read that story from Charlie Goldsmith, and you guys should do that as well. But he was taking reps with the first team over Cam Taylor-Britt earlier this week. So how much he plays and where he plays is going to be interesting. Delonte Hood has made some plays in camp. So I really think that the secondary just playing cohesively as a unit against the Cardinals passing attack that, again, is going to be led by Trace McSorley, of all people. I think that's what I'm most looking forward to.
I agree with you. A good comment, astute comment here by Robert Obrecht in our live YouTube chat. They should be winning situational football. That is my concern, stopping the run, solid tackling, and do big plays by the defense on offense. Don't want to see three and outs or penalties. Of course, it's kind of just the basics. Let's move on here. I like what you said, though, John, too, when it comes to the defense, because there is no Jesse Bates. So what is a Jesse Bates-less defense going to do with a Dax, you know, Dax Hill and others in there? What are they able to do? What are they not able to do? And, you know, this, there may be a little bit of an eye-opening moment or moments for the Bengals in this preseason where you go, wow, this is why you pay a guy like Jesse Bates, because he can do certain things. And whether or not Dax Hill will get there, is there, what have you. You know, there may be some moments where you just go, this is just why you pay a guy like that. So I think there's all of that. Of course, you want to see some things from the offensive line, but we talked about this, John. It's going to be very difficult to gauge the offensive line, given who they're going to reportedly trot out, given the fact that the Bengals have not really had too much out of Lael Collins, Alex Kappa. They're two big acquisitions of three on the offensive line. That offensive line still may be a work in progress, not because of now a lack of talent, but just time and cohesion and all of that. So I think we may see a little bit of there's still some rough stuff going on with the offensive line, but I think we got to roll with the punches a little bit and have a little patience with that.
Well, of course. I mean, you just have a bunch of second stringers out there, maybe even against guys like J.J. Watt and Marcus Golden for a drive or two against the Cardinals. So you're going to have Carmen out there. He's going to be the only day one starter out there. And that's assuming that Carmen beats out Volson for the end of the camp. But even with Volson, like, we've heard nothing. It's been radio silent for him. And he was like the most hyped up player coming out of OTAs. He was going to be the guy that was already going to supplant Jackson Carmen. Not so I don't know what he is right now. We haven't really heard or seen a lot of him. I've heard some things about Ben Brown being at center. And Lamont Galliard, who's still kicking it, he's been in multiple spots too. So I'm interested to see what that starting second string offensive line looks like. I'm assuming it's going to be, again, Devin Cochran at left tackle, Carmen left guard, Trey Hill at center, Hakeem Adeniji at right guard, and then Isaiah Prince at right tackle. Once those guys, or most of those guys, come off the field, you're probably going to have Volson at left guard, Ben Brown maybe at center. Maybe that's when Gaylord comes in at center. Maybe Gaylord is at right guard and Ben Brown is at center, and Hakeem Adeniji goes at the right tackle, because again, they only have two tackles. So how they rotate those guys is going to be interesting. One of those guys, I believe, is probably going to have to play the whole game because they just don't have enough bodies at some of those spots. But yeah, it's going to be kind of a mess, 100%, which is why they're going to run the ball a lot.
They will. And that's kind of part of what happens here. And that's why what I mentioned with P. Ryan and Evans. And I think now that Jacquez Patrick back, right? He's back in the mix there too. So, he's going to probably get a lot of work in this preseason as well. And they liked him. That poor guy going into 2020 didn't get a fair shake at preseason. He was a guy they liked. And then obviously the next season they tried to give him a shot and, they just had a lot of depth there. So before we get to our remember when and get on out of here, John, I don't know, predictions. I don't even know if score predictions are apropos at this point right now with a game like this, but I don't know. You got anything, predictions, wild, I don't know, wild I don't know if observation is the right thing, but wild predictions, wild guesses. I don't know.
You know what? Like that. Shout out Chris Hubbard. Thaddeus Moss catches a touchdown. Calling it.
There you go. If you called it, that means it's happening, my friend.
Yeah.
I hope so.
That's all I got, though.
I hope so. Yeah. Look, until there's going to be more starters playing, until there's going to be, just more integration of the playbook a little bit, and now that there's one less preseason game as there was last year, you're just going to see a watered down product. That's just kind of the bottom line. You talked about more running and whatnot, and you're going to see the 21-16 scores. You're going to see the, 20-19 where you go for two and win it at the last minute type of, you're going to see a lot of this stuff. I don't know necessarily that's going to be what happens here, but I'm not assuming a butt kick either way. I think you're going to see something that's kind of a little bit of a ugly score, and teams are going to maybe go for two, go for a field goal when you don't expect them. And that's just kind of what comes with week one of the preseason and kind of what the preseason is now, given everything.
And people are still going to tune in because it's the first Bengals 100%. Game in 6 months. I'm interested to see what the attendance is at Paycor Stadium. I believe like 30K was there at the back together Saturday practice. I'm interested to see if it's more than that for this preseason game, just because they're coming off of a Super Bowl appearance. So they're probably reeling in on the ticket sales for a meaningless game. So I'm interested to see how full that stadium is.
Yeah. All right, dude. Let's get to a remember when. I've got a little one. We've gone back and forth with these here a little bit. Speaking of preseason, speaking of week one of the preseason, and speaking of training camp battles, all of that kind of stuff. I was thinking today about, God, I guess now it'd be 13 years ago, 2009, when the Bengals were first on Hard Knocks. Now, the second one was kind of cool because, you kind of felt like, hey, this is a team on the rise. They surprised people a lot. Last year you had a lot of cool, different people in the dynamic. But 2009 was kind of really, really interesting. And I want to remember when, back to 2009, Carson Palmer was a mainstay and a focal point of this Hard Knock show, which really wasn't kind of Carson Palmer's personality from what we know of it, but he kind of had some moments of levity and humor and whatnot. Obviously, Ocho was a big part of it. You had a lot of different battles, though, John. You had, some players that were just entrenched, and guys that you had the Andre Smith contract impasse that was documented on the show. But I thought back to this, and it's not, the kiss the baby and, child please and all that kind of stuff that Chad made popular by doing this. Here are a couple of, first of all, if you want to talk about the lack of Bengals popularity or whatnot, this particular year of the show won two Emmys, and it was the highest rated version of the show to that point. And the show had been in existence, I think, 2003, 2000, something like that. So, it had been in existence for a while. And I kind of felt like, number one, not only were the Bengals hitting their stride as a team, but the show and the way they produced it and the way they did everything with it was kind of hitting its stride. But the thing that really stuck out with me were the camp battles, because, again, it was a team that you felt like, you had Chad Johnson and Lavernius be a pro. Remember the eyeballs with that whole locker room talk. You had Lavernius Coles in there. You had a lot of entrenched starters. The offensive line was in decent shape at that point, regardless of the Andre Smith situation. but you had a lot of running back battles. You had D.D. Dorsey. Remember that? You had a punt return and special teams battles. Quan Cosby, Tom Nelson. Yeah, who, by the way, both of those guys made it. And I think D.D. Dorsey did as well. And then the fullback was a prominent position. Who was it? Runnels. That was the Bengals got a lot of criticism with Lippincott knocking on J.D. Runnels' door in the middle of the night and kind of saying, hey, get on the plane. You're out of here. And then you had Fui Vakapuna.
Yes.
You had, you know, Chris Presley. Remember all these guys? Yeah. And you're like, damn, I wish that guy, how do we find places for all of these players? How do we find roster spots for all of these guys? And they just couldn't do it, obviously. But it was like, this time of year always reminds me of Hard Knocks, of the Bengals Hard Knocks stints, both of them, but namely this one. And I remember 09 because, you know, after 05, I think we just sat here for years going, damn, they were close in 06. 07 was just like, okay. And then, of course, oh my gosh, I see it. I see it right here. Here it is, the haircut.
Put it up on Fui the screen. Vakapuna's that is haircut. A human being.
There it is right there. The reverse mohawk. For those who grew up in my era and listened to music in the 1990s, this, remember the band Prodigy? You probably don't remember the band Prodigy. It was kind of a house techno alternative band. They kind of blended a lot of styles. They had a guy who had a reverse mohawk where he shaved the middle of his head and he had the other, he spiked it out. This is a little bit like that. The Fui Vakapuna rookie haircut. Oh my God. How did that guy live with that? Good God.
But I think I think all of the things that you said is why that season was so intoxicating for just people who weren't Bengals fans and why it was so highly rated. Because the thing that people loved about Hard Knocks, or at least in the past few years, just in my recent memory, it's like, it's just about the stories. It's about the players that you don't know about. Like some of the earliest Hard Knocks it was like the Ravens and the Cowboys and some of the best memories from them. It's like the Shannon Sharp at the rookie dinner with like Ray Lewis or something. But with these guys, like I forgot all about Chris Presley. I forgot all about Fui Vakapuna. I'm so glad that you brought him back into my memory banks. But that's the whole essence of Hard Knocks. It's seeing these guys that you've never heard of take on this grind for their livelihood. And I feel like this specific team, because no one really knew that much about the Bengals anyways, maybe still people don't know a lot about the Bengals at all. So it's just like, it's not just the stars aside from Chad Johnson were barely known. It's the guys that you've never heard of, and you're just so entrenched with their lives and what they're going through with this team. And it was so interesting. Obviously, Chad kissed the baby, his conversation with Andrew Whitworth, that always gets played on the Hard Knocks channel or the NFL Films channel. And that's certainly a highlight. Be a Pro is a phenomenal just Hall of Fame moment for the show. But yeah, like those names that you just mentioned, it's a blast from the past. And just watching in real time was so intoxicating to watch.
And I think part of it also is how that season ended, not the playoff loss, but the fact that they made the playoffs. A lot of people didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. Carson Palmer had a number of injuries. Again, you had guys like, you know, Chris Henry, Cedric Benson. It's just that you kind of romanticize the thing a little bit. And, you know, those players, Vakapuna, Presley, et cetera, they were going up against Jeremy Johnson, who was a stud his first couple of years with the team when he was drafted. And then just weight issues and just, you know, hey, where are we at as a team? Reassessing everything, those guys were pushing him for a spot. So remember when the Bengals were on the 2009 Hard Knocks series and all of the cast of characters, D.D. Dorsey, Tom Nelson, Quan Cosby. Quan Cosby was a personal favorite. I loved Quan Cosby. But anyway, that's my remember when. John, let's drop the mic and get out of here. What do you got for us, my friend?
I didn't really have anything, but Jason Von Stein in the comments section listed Run P, and that was also something that was... Jordan Shipley should have been that was Jordan Shipley, right?
It was Jordan Palmer.
For the longest time I thought it was Shipley, but that didn't really make any sense. Palmer. But wow. Yeah, like I legit used that app in movies, like just to see like when I don't think I ever really actually went to the bathroom, but like before I would see a movie, I would see like, okay, when is the time when I could go to the bathroom? Ingenious idea that at least lasted a decent amount for just a random app to start.
This is solid idea. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I don't really have anything for my remember one. Just again, if you haven't already, visit our fundraiser with the David Pollock Foundation. We're a little bit of ways from our goal, but again, every dollar counts. Even if we don't hit it, your money is going to a great cause. Great things are happening with them. Check it out if you haven't already.
Absolutely. And we've got a little couple of announcements to make here, John, and we'll put this on the screen here. We've got a busy week next week. We've got a busy week with a couple of big guests here, and one of which we are slated to have is Sam Hubbard, a yearly tradition, it seems, with Sam Hubbard. We always have him about this time of year, so we thank him for giving us some time here. And then, of course, we're working on locking up Solomon Wilcots. He was on our show a long time ago there, and a guy that was a great, great player, a great analyst with the NFL Network and CBS Sports, and now is on the Believe in Bengals podcast with, of course, Pac-Man Jones, and does a number of different things. So the Believe Network has also been a great to our show. Cam Rogers and the group there in the Believe in Bengals and Believe Podcast Network in general. Of course, you do great work with them as well, John, and the DNH Sports. They're part of the Believe in Bengals Network as well. So we're working on hammering that out, but it looks like both of those special guests will be part of our week next week. Sam Hubbard making time for us, and Solomon Wilcots, former Bengals defensive back, NFL analyst, and Believe in Bengals podcast host. Looking forward to that, man. That's going to be a great one.
Do you think Sam remembers us at this point? You know,
I mean, God, it's been like 3 or 4 years now. You know what he's going to do, right? We're going to see him beforehand. He's going to be like, hey guys, good to see you again. You know, yep. And it's going to be like, do you remember Sam? Do you actually remember? I hope so. I may break out the arm brace again. Remember last year I was talking to him about the arm brace. I don't know if I'll do that, but I hope he does. I mean, God, it's been, like I said, like probably since he was been a rookie that he's been on our show, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it went back to 2019. If not, it went back to 2020. I think the first two times were with
pretty
Pepsi.
Close.
So, you know, he gets around. He gets around on Zoom. So I'm happy to have him back on.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome talking to him about a lot of different things as well as Solomon Wilcots. So you won't want to miss that. We've got a lot of good stuff coming your way. And again, support the Pollock Family Foundation how you can. We've got a fundraiser up on givesendgo.com/Pollock Family Foundation. We've got prizes for you. We'll bribe you. I mean, I'm not beneath bribing you all to get some, well, I mean, legally bribing, because this is for a nonprofit. This is for, but I am not beneath incentivizing you to donate. So please do. And give us your contact information if and when you do, so that we can enter you in drawings for certain prizes. We got some great stuff coming up, and we'll unveil all that stuff. But we appreciate it. John, thanks for everything, man. Hope you have a good rest of your week, my friend.
You as well. Talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, everybody.